respect me, love me, and want to be with me.
Amen.
I have 17 grandchildren and one great-grandchild. All of them want to spend time with Papa and Grandma. They want to be with us. How can a man be blessed beyond that?
Right.
We have a home, we have vehicles, we have heating, we have air conditioning, we have food, we have everything we need. I have a job that I love doing, that I make a good living at. I find that my life is blessed in so many ways.
Amen.
Now let me say to you, because you might not be in that place yet. We went through our valleys. We went through our struggles. We had our times of tear, times of doubt, times when it felt like it was all falling down. But God always answers prayers, and they always come about in His time.
In His time.
But of all these blessings, there was one moment that I point to that created all of these blessings. That moment was 44 years ago, the last Sunday in December in 1973, when they sang the song, "Just As I Am." Edie and I went forward. We made a decision that we were going to commit our life fully to Jesus Christ, and we were baptized.
Amen.
Had it not been for that moment, everything I have would not be there.
That's right.
I have a marriage because I'm committed to God.
Amen.
I have a marriage with children who love me in spite of me, because I'm committed to God.
Amen.
I have been successful in my life because I'm committed to God. Do not leave this retreat only picking up some tools.
Right.
Understand that underlying that is that relationship with God. And here's the practical importance of a relationship with God. If you are reactive in your relationship with your partner, in other words, you give them what they deserve, you're going to have a terrible marriage. If you are committed to God, then there's something bigger than you, bigger than your partner. So to me, when Edie and I don't see eye to eye on something, the issue is not, is she stubborn? The issue is not, is she unwilling to listen to me? The issue is, I'm committed to God. I have to do the right thing. I have no choice but to do the right thing.
Amen.
Secondly, that committed to God is committed to His church. We're committed to the mission of His church.
Yes.
We spend a lot of time reaching out to people. Edie, if you go through her purse right now, you'll find all sorts of slips of paper with phone numbers for people at Walmart, people at a fast food place, people everywhere that she get their phone number and sets up Bob says. We work hard for the ministry. The last thing I want to do is to let my example in my marriage make that any harder for me. Do you understand what I mean?
Right.
Patty is a 40-something-year-old woman. She had a very, very difficult childhood. Abused in an orphanage, rejected by her family, back with her family, but a family very unsupportive, in an abusive relationship. I first met her, she was an emotional mess. I mean, you try to, like, let's settle down, let's try to get one sentence back and forth here. And it was not happening. She started getting with Edie, started hanging around with her family. Edie started studying with her along with one of my daughters. She was baptized, kept hanging around with Edie. She is a changed woman. Here, this is interesting, funny, but do not tell her this, okay? Raise your hand. You promise not to tell her. Just the other day, one of our daughters, Tricia, ran off one of these adoption certificates. I think she got it from the Cabbage Patch website. But she put Patty's name on it and put places for me, Edie, and all the children to sign to adopt Patty. And, she kind of did it, not as a joke, but sort of, this is cute. Well, She had it at the church office, and Edie and Jerry, my daughter, one of my daughters, and Tricia, another daughter, always are at the church on Tuesdays, and other women come over, and Patty come over, and Jerry took it, and Jerry signed her name, and she signed my name too, Joe Garner. And she signs my name so often. She works for me. She's my office manager. She signs my name so often. that the bank would probably reject any check that I actually signed. She signs this, she gives it to her. Patty went crazy at that. She came to me, hugging me, saying, I can't believe that not only did you sign it that I could be your daughter, but that you signed Joe Garman instead of Dr. Garman. Mm-hmm. I had not the heart to tell her. But you see what I'm saying?
Right.
That it was not just the scriptures. Now the scriptures are powerful. Yeah. But it was not just the scriptures, right. The scriptures being lived out in our family.
Amen.
That she loved.
Amen.
And she's a changed woman now. Mm-hmm. She is one of the joys of the church.
Yeah.
I do not want my example of problems in my marriage to affect. And let me be honest with you. Sometimes that's my motive. Mm. Okay? Believe it or not, there are times in my stupidity that I feel that I have a reason to be irritated at my wife. Mm-hmm. And then I think, I'm about to head to church. I can't do that now. Good motives are bad. Sometimes it's commitment to doing the task which God has called us to. What I say, and I say this to my sons quite often, they'll say, well, my wife did so. I said, sons, we don't have any time for this. We do not have time. You need to go back. You need to humble yourself. You need to get this right. Because we've got a job to do. We've got something that we've got to accomplish. And I thank God that Patty is going to be in heaven, and not only in heaven, but she's out there inviting people all the time. She's taking people with her because I decided when I walk in the house and Patty's there along with five or six other people, and I'm tired, and I want my dinner, and I want to sit down and be quiet, and now the house is full of people, then I didn't say, what are y'all doing? I walk in that door, and I can tell you the way I come in at the back door and walk through the laundry room, but I can hear all the noise in the kitchen, and I know Edie's got a house full, and I have had a hard day, and I'm ready to quit. And I'll say, no, I'm calling that woman. And by the time I get to the kitchen door, I decide, bless that woman. The reason I do that is because I do not want my walking in there in a bad attitude, acting like I'm somebody special, to cause anybody. It's a commitment to his church and the mission of his church, and also it's a commitment to the people of his church that help us with this problem. You know, I say that I think the assurance that every woman needs in a Christian marriage is that their husband has someone to whom they are accountable. They have someone that's going to take care of business for them. Do you understand what I mean? And that is what the foundation for the kind of marriage that we want. Edie's going to talk a little bit about consideration. Edie is having a little bit of problems with her voice, just that she's strained. And so give her a little bit of encouragement. After that, I'm going to do some fun things. We'll be very brief when she's finished.
Thank you, Edie. Joe chose these scriptures, and he chose them, and read them to me, and I couldn't figure out why he started them with men. but I just went with the flow.
They need it.
So.
Women are
That's
okay.
That's what he was saying.
Women are okay. Just talk to the men.
not where I grew up. So. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, he says, husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you as the gracious gift of life.
Amen.
So that nothing will hinder your prayers.
Amen.
And I believe that he's not only talking to men, but to the women also. When I thought of consideration, I wanted to look up synonyms of consideration because I think we all know what to be considerate means. But I thought, okay, well, let me look up what the synonyms would be. And it said to explore, to acknowledge, allow for, look at, consult, contemplate. I like these. Dream of.
All right.
Work with. And recognize.
Amen.
So I was thinking about being considerate, and one of the things that I can, you know, we've been married for 47 years, and when we started off in our marriage back in the early 70s, life wasn't that way. I know most of you weren't even alive at that point. So. It was a different social structure, and everybody kind of, the lifestyle was totally different, and it was everybody for their own, basically. We had our, yeah, 70s was really different. So when you brought two people together, you lived in the same house, but you had your own way of life, and women were burning their bras, and guys were streaking on campus. You know, we were almost in a different women's liberation again. So, and I don't think that was a real good thing for women. I feel like we took that too far, in a sense, because I think we began to step away from God, in a sense, with that. I know that what I did when I grew up, my parents did not have a godly marriage, but they had an old Southern marriage where the husband was the head of the house, and he walked in the door, and he started, you know, Marie, I want my glass of tea, and he'd come in, sit down, and everything from that point on was about him. And dinner had to be on the table at a certain time, and there was no consideration on his part for my mom. It was all about her serving him. Well, when I got married, my thought was,
ain't gonna do it.
And, you know, what was happening on campus played right on into that. So I was very happy to walk with Jane Fonda and her little group of So we went totally different ways in the beginning of our marriage, and 3 years into it, it was like, If we could afford this, we would go our separate ways, but we couldn't. And right at that same time is when we became Christians.
Amen.
And had to turn everything around. And we had 3 children from infancy to 2.
Oh, Lord, how do we do it?
And we had to learn fast how to become parents and how to become considerate, loving, giving adults, married couple. Mm-hmm. And it was a very humbling and long journey. But I can say by the grace of God, right. And I know He still has things for us to learn and to grow in, though we are just about there, because I still have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But some of the things that will help you as young marrieds or along your way is that be helpful to one another. Mm-hmm. I shared with the younger group that we had breakfast with this morning, mm-hmm. Don't always feel like that what you're doing is the harder thing. Mm-hmm. Because whoever and whatever you're doing is always the hardest. Right? You know, for you it is, for them it is also.
Okay.
And accept that. Mm-hmm. Accept that. And you be the one giving to the other. Think about them. Consider them. Be their helpmate. Be their encouragement. Think about them during the day. Or with them in your mind. If you can't send them a text or put a note in their lunch or however during the day to reach out to them, if you can't do that, then at least in your mind, think about them. I know that my husband thinks about me all day long.
All right.
Do you know how I know that? Because I get multiple calls during the day. Now, when he calls me, I want to take advantage of that. But he cannot take advantage of that. He's like, okay, I gotta go. But let the other person know.
Yeah.
You know, I think about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you get home, if your wife has been the one that's been the caregiver for the children, if you have children, don't come home and just say, oh man, I've had such a hard day. Or if it's the husband that's home with the children, you just don't know what my day's like. I just say, honey, can I change a diaper? Can I take the children out for a minute and give you a little bit of time alone? Do you want me to draw you a bath? Do you want, you know, a candle? Do you want to lay down for a minute? I'll turn you on some music. It's a hard job either yeah. way. It's really hard being out there. You don't know the conversations that spouse has had to be in all day away from the house. Mm-hmm. You don't know what he's been tempted with or she's been tempted with. You don't know what Satan's been attacking them with.
That's right.
Yeah. You want to, and I try not to have the house full when Joe comes home. I know he's tired. I know that.
Baby.
I try to have his dinner made. I try to. Walked in the door because we had children, And services were always at 7 o'clock. And he walked in the door, we ate dinner, and we started getting baths, and it was off to church we went. When you have 5 little ones, you have to learn a schedule. You have to stick to it. You've got to be organized. And so time management is very important when you have a lot of things to do. And we stay to that. He walks in the door, we have dinner. It's never changed.
Yeah.
And so I know that's something that he likes, and that's something I try to do for him.
Yeah.
Now, I don't always control who I have in the afternoon, and that's usually children or older grandchildren that drop by. And sometimes friends, but... I must say that I don't know anyone that has changed more than my husband.
Amen.
He is the most giving and loving. In the beginning of our marriage, he used to ask me to get up and get him drinks or get him a snack or... And now he's like, can I get you something?
Amen.
Can I get you a drink? Would you like me to take this to the bedroom for you? Would you? And I'm like, I feel so guilty. I was like, no, honey, I'll do it. So, you know, it works really well if you take that extra step and be that servant, because that's what, you know, that makes for an awesome marriage.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes everyone happy, because you cannot outgive.
That's right.
Come on. That's good.
And that also, it just changes you. I think on surprising them, doing extra little things. Now, one time I tried to surprise Joe and take him away on a vacation, but that's not what he wanted to do, so that didn't play out. That was years ago, and I didn't know exactly what he was liking at that time. So that was another area that I thought, you know, since y'all are really newlyweds, some of you are, get to know who you're married to. You want to study your partner a little bit. And Joe talked about coming into marriage with the baggage. Sometimes we don't even realize what kind of baggage that we have. You know, in our own specific life, it was like 20-some years before things in our marriage were uncovered. Well, in my personal baggage, that I had no idea. And, you know, until one of my discipleship partners started asking questions, and then I was like, and I had no, it just started coming out. And then I realized, you know, these are some reasons that these things always sparked. It was being intimate. This is why I never liked this, or this is why that always bothered me. And then you're like, wow, where did this all come from? Now I know where.
Yeah.
So,
that's good.
Sometimes it takes a long time to get to really understand where you are or who you are. And then we're always evolving.
Right.
That's true.
As a couple, you're always growing. And you're not always growing at the same speed or going in the same direction.
That's
and that's okay. Joe has gone a completely different direction than I have. I stopped my college education as a nurse. I worked off and on as a nurse over the years. We were in the ministry for years and years and years and years. And then when we were no longer in the ministry, I worked as a nurse while he finished his education to become a doctor. And then I quit nursing and he went to work. So now I've retired for close to 20 years. It's been 18 years now.
Wow. Land by the pool if we have.
I know. So he's gone in a completely different direction. And sometimes that's intimidating to me. And I have to, he works and has his office full of doctors and women and men with master's degrees. And most of our children work in that office with him. And we have to stay really close and really tight because there have been times that I have struggled with and still do at times feeling jealous or feeling like I'm not included. Wait, what if he feels like I'm not as good as or highly educated as he is? And those are real struggles that can come up in a marriage. And you have to feel really well-rounded. You have to feel really strong in your marriage and have that commitment that he was talking about, that commitment to God and to each other. And you need to really be considerate to each other in all of these areas and think about, contemplate, flirt with these ideas.
All right, we're short of time. I'm going to move fast. Wait, I'm going to move fast just a minute. I'm going to try to in a few minutes talk about communication, conflict management, because they tie together, they go together. And what I'm going to try to do is to give you some concepts, because if you're limited intellectually, then Mike will help you with these concepts. None of you are there. You can work some of these things out, so I'm going to do some of that. Let me know, and I wish I had a few minutes to just comment. I really appreciate what he shared. Yeah. Let me. She said something that I think is important for the men to hear. Women taking a little break. She mentioned women's liberation. And here's what we feel on that. First off, we feel like women have the right to do all the things. They ought to have the right to do all the things, career-wise, so on and so forth. But women's liberation did not liberate women. What women's liberation did is said, women now have to go to work and keep doing all the things that they used to do. Any of you men help at home? Did any men help at home? Okay, put your hands down in shame. You do not help in the house. It is your home. Many of you who raise your hands, your wife also works, but she comes home, she is expected to clean the house, fix the dinner, take care of the kids, and you help her along the way. You know, y'all maybe shift that. Maybe she'll help you as you clean the kitchen and cook the meal and shame the children and do all the other things that women do. So that men, we need to make sure that we're not seeing this idea of women's rights as of adding more responsibilities to women, but we need to be understanding that we share. If the wife works outside the home, then the home belongs to both people and their work. My wife does not work outside the home technically. She's always working. But I almost always, I do the dishes after dinner. And there's certainly, you know, like I come in, it's not like I get to sit down. There are things that I do because I ought to do those things. And that's how they ought to be. Let me talk a little bit about conflict. I need somebody young, a man, young, strong, virile. Anybody here?
His one.
Contestant in. Those of you in the back, if you want to, you can.
Just one person. Mm-hmm. Come on. If you would, sit across from me here. What we're doing, we're talking about communication. So I'm going to just, a simple idea, I'm just going to communicate with you. We're going to kind of process through what happens when we communicate, okay? Mm-hmm. What I want you to do is to hug the potholder without picking it up.
Hug?
Hug the potholder without picking it up. a hug like we normally use the word hug. Well, no, I appreciate you squishing it, but that's not how we love to hug somebody. I want you to hug the potholder without picking it up. Why are you being rebellious? Come on, just hug. I don't understand the problem that you're having. I'm communicating well with you. Somehow you're not listening to me. Hug the potholder without picking it up. No, I wasn't. Hug the potholder without picking it up.
Oh.
Oh, now you see it. Well, tell him.
Hug
the potholder.
Without picking it up.
Hug
the potholder without picking it up.
Okay.
Is that how you hug your hug?
Consider yourself hugged.
I want you to hug the potholder without picking it up.
It's right here, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, you may not remember anything you said, but you'll remember that game.
Yes.
Here's what you see in it. Two things. Number one, cognitive inflexibility. Once I see it one way, it's hard to change my mind.
Isn't that true? That's very true.
Once you get in my, in other words, I've got the pot behind me. They don't see the pot. Once they get in mind that that is the only pothole, that's the only option, I've got the pot swinging in front of them, hitting my hand with it, and they're still not changing how they see it. That's what happens to us. In our communication, cognitive inflexibility means that we're not able to relook at the same situation. That's why arguments don't work. Okay? Arguments don't work. You know, we go back and forth arguing about something, but all we do is reinforce their inflexibility. And what we have to do in a marriage is to be able to have some flexibility, to be able to see things in a different way. I think, and this is true, I think the way that I see things is the only right way to see it. That's the correct. Now, if you think that's true, you have a problem. There are many ways to see it. You know, I always talk about we have different styles.
Absolutely.
Very different styles of life. If you ask me where my car keys are, any moment, day or night, I can tell you where my car keys are. Because there are only two places the car keys should be. In my right pocket or on my dresser. There's no place else. If you ask Edie for her car keys, it begins by a journey. A walk around the house, a trip back out to the car, and I'm saying your keys ought to be here or here.
Two places.
We have done a key rack.
Yes.
When you come in, hang your keys. My way is not the only way. My way works for me.
Right.
Her way works for her. I am very, I'm very organized. If I'm headed somewhere, I'm headed up here, and I know the directions until I get close to it, I leave the house, and I've got the directions all laid out here. I've got everything organized. I'm ready, and, I've got everything stacked so that when I get out of the car, I'm ready to go. We pull up, we turn off the car, and he just says, oh, yeah, where are my shoes? We're totally different.
This time.
The value of her way is that she's much more relaxed than I am. Mm-hmm. I've had to learn a lot of that, and I appreciate that. My way of thinking is only my way of thinking.
Yeah. Right.
It is not the right way of thinking.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean in everything I have to change my way of thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does mean that I have to understand that it helps me. It takes away some of my anxiety of searching for car keys.
Yeah.
But it's only my way.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be flexible enough to know that there isn't a right way in most of the things that we're looking at.
That's true.
There isn't a right way. There are different ways, and that's all okay. The second thing that happened to the potholder is nonverbal communication. When I said hug the potholder, I glanced down at the potholder on the floor, and all three times they looked down with me. Nonverbal communication, you know what that means. Tell me some things about nonverbal communication. What do we look at when we're talking about nonverbal communication?
Body language.
Say that?
Body language.
Body language? Okay, what else?
Facial expressions.
Tone of voice.
Well, there are a lot of other nonverbals. One nonverbal is history. In other words, it is not something that I'm saying, but we know the history of this discussion, and so it all comes in and it communicates something.
Yeah.
Context. context, where you are, what's happening. All of these things that I'm verbal. In surveys, 90-something percent of the people, always in the 90s, say that they're very good at reading nonverbals. Raise your hand if you're good at reading nonverbals. In research, when they're actually put to the practice, less than 30% get it right. Now, the implication of that is we think we know what our partner's saying. We don't have any clue what they're saying. We sometimes need to understand what they're saying before we start responding to what they're saying. We think we know. I remember, here are a couple of examples. Joey, in school, we would get calls from his teacher, or conferences with teacher, and saying, Joey's being disrespectful in the classroom. We certainly don't want that. I mean, you know, tell us what he's doing, we'll take care of that. Well, I'll tell him something and he'll laugh. Disrespectful. Well, what happens is Joey laughs when he's nervous. Do you understand what I mean? Johnny, he had done something, and I asked him the most ignorant question a parent can ask. I said, what were you thinking? As though he had actually been thinking. And at the time, he's sitting on the floor, you know, and he kind of moaned, oh, no. And he's kind of picking out the carpet. Johnny, look at me, son. And he keeps going, Johnny, tell me what you were thinking. Okay, son, this goes on a few times. I said, I'm trying to be considerate of this. I'm trying to understand. If you don't even want to be respectful enough to answer me, go into your room. Just go to your room. So he goes to his room. I'm in the kitchen a little bit later, and he walks in there and says, Dad, here's what I was thinking. When you start talking to me, I get so nervous, I don't know what to say. Well, it wasn't disrespect at all. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
It wasn't disrespect. And sometimes, now be careful with this. Sometimes when you say, are you upset? Now, sometimes if we say it a second or third time, we're going to get them.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need to make sure that we're understanding. The process of communication is much more complicated than you think. We think that because we learn at a very early age how to say words, we think we have learned how to communicate. We have not learned how to communicate. We've learned how to say words. We don't know how to use those words. And the process of communication, there are a few different theories of communication, but one of them is the seven-factor theory of communication. And I won't go through all seven factors, but it begins with an intent. What do I intend to create by this communication? And then there is the encoding. How am I going to say that in order to accomplish this intent? It goes through a few things, including the nonverbal, comes out over here as interpretation. Okay? And so between those things, there are a ton of things that can go wrong. And quite often, we haven't even clarified in our own mind what is our intent. Sometimes I'll be sitting there with a couple in therapy, and one of them will say something. And before the other, I'll step and wait. I'm just curious. Help me understand. What is it that you wanted to create by that statement? I want her to understand that she needs to do more around the house. No. Tell me what you're trying to accomplish here. Are you trying to accomplish her being more diligent? Or are you trying to accomplish her apologizing to you? Or are you trying to accomplish respect? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Let's clarify that, and then I'll show you how to do it. I'll show you how to say it in a way that she can accept it. Sometimes there needs to be a process. You've seen that process where one person makes a statement, the other person responds to what they said. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need to sit down and do that. Ian and I had a conflict. Shortly after we got married, we had a conflict. We did not resolve that conflict. We could not resolve that conflict. I said, she said, we went back and forth, finally we just let that thing go. 15 years. Every once in a while, it would stick its head up. One night, we're already in bed, And I say, let's talk about that.
Tell me what you were fearing.
She said first, I'm not going there. I mean, we have tried this. I'm not even going to go there. And she began to tell me. And the whole time, I'm laying there silently, and you know what I'm saying in my mind? Uh-uh. No, I didn't. You did. That's what I'm saying in my mind. And I pushed all that back and said, listen. And she kept talking. And then I tried to think as she was talking. She was 18 at the time. I was 21. She had lived with her mama and daddy. And all of a sudden, she's with this strange man. And I mean strange. Who has no clue about what to do in life. And all of a sudden, he's saying this to her. Man, how would she feel? She'd feel very accused. I begin to understand, finally, what she was feeling. And I said, I'm sorry. That's all there is to it. That's what it takes sometimes in communication. You need to understand that what I think I'm saying is not what I'm always saying. In communication has the power to build and the power to destroy.
That's true.
We can, through our words, do you know that song, Angry Words? Oh, let them never from the tongue unbridled slip. Do you know that song?
Well,
y'all need to sing that church. That's an old one, but that one has a message. Angry words, disrespectful words, are devastating. You know that sticks and stones may break my bones, the words will never hurt me. That's a lie. Flat out lie. Because words can destroy people.
Yeah, that's true.
There are things that were said to you when you were a child that you still remember.
Yeah.
They stick there and they affect how you see yourself and how you see the world around you. Words can destroy.
Yeah.
And words can also build. I do, in therapy, I do what's called constructivistic cognitive therapy. Constructivism, any of you philosophers? Constructivism, there are two basic schools of thought in philosophy. One is positivism, and the other is constructivism. This is going to be on the test. And in positivism, And I'm simplifying a ton of research or thought on philosophy. In positivism, the basic assumption is, what is, and is my job to understand what is. That's positivism. Constructivism says, what is flexible. And I can construct through my words and actions, I can construct what happens. Let me give you an example of that. A long while back, had this couple I was seeing. Seen them a couple times for marriage therapy. I walked out of the waiting room to get them this time. I could tell they were having in the middle of the fight. He's on this side, she's on this side of the waiting room. They come in, I said, what's going on? Well, as we unfolded it, five days, yelling, screaming, throwing pots and pans, cursing. I'm going to get a divorce. You need to get out of here. 5 days this stuff went on. I said, what started? Now, this is very interesting. Neither one of them knew in the beginning. I don't know where it started. Isn't that significant? Something so trivial that they can't remember what they got upset about, but now they're so upset about what they've done in the interactions that the thing continues. And I said, well, let's walk back. Let's, 5 days have been going on. So let's, what were you doing this day? Well, here was the situation. They've been out house hunting. And you know how frustrating that can be. And they decided instead of going home and cooking dinner, they were going to stop and get pizza. He gets out to get the pizza. She says, don't forget to get extra cheese. He goes in. 20 minutes later, he comes out with pizza. He comes back with pizza with extra cheese on. He opens the door, and she says, did you get extra cheese? That started the argument. That question. Started an argument that I'm not stupid. I don't have to leave. You don't think I do anything right. Well, you don't do anything right.
She goes back.
Yep.
I said to him, okay, let me try a scenario here with you. What if you had said to her, yes, honey, I know you like extra cheese, so I made some extra cheese.
Come on.
And he says to me, oh, you don't know her. That's not what she meant. You don't know. And I said, now, forget all that. Forget about what she meant. Let's even forget what she meant. Let's assume that she was critical the moment you opened that door. Let's assume she thought you were an idiot, didn't know how to buy pizza. Let's assume. Now, with that assumption, what would have happened if you had said, yes, honey, I know you like extra cheese, so I made sure to put it on there. He mumbles and grumbles for a while. He had a hard time accepting it. Finally, he said, well, I guess there wouldn't have been an argument. And I said, there you go. We construct our own reality. There is a concept. I know I'm out of time. I know I'm out of time. There is a concept. Ascribed attributes. Ascribed attributes. Ascribing means I'm giving an attribute to something valuable. Ascribed attributes. Here's how that works. When we first got married, I am by nature a very, very impatient person. I'm ready to do it. Ready to do it now. Don't slow me down. Give me the answer. Give it to me right this second. On the way up here, Edie and I were talking about the time we presented together. And she said, sometimes you make me nervous when we're presenting together. I don't want to make you nervous. How do I make you nervous? Because you're so ready to go all the time that I have to think for a moment. And I don't know if any of you know Martin Bentley.
Yeah.
I said, it's like Martin Bentley. I call Martin Bentley. And I say, hey, Martin, how you doing?
Good, Joe.
How are you doing? I'm good, Martin. How are things going down there?
Well, Joe.
Martin, say it, man. Say it. Let's move it on. When we first got married, I was working full-time, and I was in school. We had three small children, one small child, then two small children, three small children in the house. I would get home from work, and now we were involved in the church. And so every night we're gone. Back then we had Sunday Bible study, Sunday worship service, Sunday evening church, and before Sunday evening church we had student suppers. Then on Monday, we had our Bible soul talk. And then on Tuesday, I got with my discipleship party. Then on Wednesday, we had Wednesday night church. On Thursday, we had the married adults devotional. And on Friday, we had the bigger devotional.
Wow.
And in the midst of that, we did not miss services. In the midst of that, I'm trying to do my homework. Kids are coming in. Daddy, daddy. Are you with me? Edie would look for just one little positive thing. Like they'd come in and show the picture and say, oh, very nice. And then I'm back on my work and she'd say, you know, one thing I appreciate about you is you take time with kids. She's like when you told her that was a pretty picture. A lot of daddies don't do that.
Yeah.
You really care. She did that a few times and you know what I started saying? That's right. Down to what we tell them about themselves. You know this, don't you? You kids come to you with a picture and you can't even decide what in the world is supposed to be. And what do you say? That's so pretty. Now, come on, tell the truth. Is it really so pretty? You hang that thing on the fridge as though it's some great masterpiece. What are you doing? You're ascribing some positive attributes to help them to be able to live up to those attributes. If it works with children, it'll certainly work with your husband because he's a higher. And sometimes we construct what we want in a relationship by the words that we use.
Right.
Edie constantly tells me how awesome I am.
And you are, baby.
I know it.
She always tells me how awesome I am. And, you know, sometimes I've been such a dog that I know, oh, that's not true. But she'll say it enough times that I start saying, you know, I am. Don't you guys wish you could be like me? And when I think I am an awesome husband, I try to be an awesome husband. We construct by the words that we say. Our communication, I believe strongly in communication. I do not curse. I do not curse. My mother would not let us say bywords. You know what bywords are, don't you? Bywords are like doggone it. She wouldn't let us say bywords because she says in your heart you still say curse. I don't curse. Sometimes people say, well, what's the big deal? You know, what do these words mean? I will delete posts when someone has the post, even if it's a friend. I may even unfriend if I get a couple of these. I will delete posts if it has cursing in it because I believe that words have power. What I say changes this universe. What I say will last to all of eternity. If I can say the good things, then somehow, some way, I'm moving this world in a positive, meaningful way with my children, with my wife. The words that I say have meaning.
Yeah.
And so I need to treasure those things, and I need to use them correctly and be cautious on how I communicate.
Amen. Amen.
All right, that's not all I have to say, but that's all the time. I'm going to end here. Here's what I would say to you. Here's what I say to you. Deal with the conflicts when they come up. Deal with them in a loving way. Remember that. Remember that tug of war. And when you start pulling, and they start pulling back, you may win, but if you win, they're going to come back on you somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have ground glass in your meatloaf. No, they won't do that. They won't do that, but they will. Unconsciously, if you use your power to accomplish what you want, it will come back on you.
Yeah.
Go over to where they are. Walk with them. And let your communication, don't try to read these nonverbals too fast. You know, try to understand. Have some flexibility in how you think. Be willing to look at situations differently. And understand there are things that work for me in ways that I see it, that I see it because of my experiences in life. That's fine. Somebody else can see it, and that's okay. I can accept that, and we can still live in harmony. Thank you very much.